know it.
How could I have come up out of deep water? And 21 years later, it held him down. Your loving sister, Eleanor. Of course I pray that you are well. Write me.
Midsummer Eve, 1670. London. The ramshackle warehouse was the wrong side of the river, the south side, where the buildings jostled for space and the little boats unloaded pocket-sized cargoes for scant profit. The wealth of London passed them by, sailing upstream to the half-built new custom house, its cream stone facade set square on the fast-flowing river as if it would tax every drop of the roiling, dirty water. The greatest ships, towed by eager barges, glided past the little wharves, as if the quays were nothing but flotsam, sticks and cobbles, rotting as they stood. Twice a day, even the tide deserted them, leaving banks of stinking mud and piers of weedy ramps rising like old bones from the water. This warehouse, and all the others leaning against it, like carelessly shelved books, shuddering along the bank towards the dark channel at the side, were hungry for the wealth that had sailed with the new king in the ship that had once been Oliver Cromwell's, into the country that had once been free. These poor merchants, scraping a living from the river trade, heard all about the new king and his glorious court at Whitehall, but they gained nothing from his return. They saw him only once, as he sailed by, the royal pennants flying fore and aft, once and never again, not down here, on the south side of the river, on the east side of the town. This was never a place that people visited. It was a place that people left, not a place that ever saw a grand carriage or a fine horse. The returning king stayed west of the city, surrounded by aristocratic chancers and titled whores, all of them desperate for promiscuous pleasure, jerked back from despair by gambler's luck, not one of them earning their good fortune. But this little house clung to the old Puritan principles of hard work and thrift, just as the buildings clung to the quayside. So thought the man who stood before it, staring up at the windows as if he were hoping to catch a glimpse of someone inside. His brown suit was neat, the white lace at his collar and cuffs modest in these times of fashionable excess. His horse stood patiently behind him as he scanned the blank face of the warehouse, the pulley on the wall, and the wide-open double doors, and then turned to the murky river to watch the lumpers throwing heavy grain sacks, one to another, from the grounded flat-bottomed barge, grunting a monotone chant to keep the rhythm. The gentleman on the quayside felt as alien here as he did on his rare visits to court. It seemed as if there was no place for him at all in this new England. In the glittering, noisy palaces, he was a dowdy reminder of a difficult past, best clapped on the back with a quickly forgotten promise. But here on the quayside at Bermondsey, he stood out as a stranger, a rich idler among labouring men, a silent presence amid the constant scream from the pulley of the crane, the rumble of rolling barrels, the shouted orders, and the sweating lumpers. At court, he was in the way of a thoughtless round of pleasure. He was too drab for them. Here, he was in the way of the passage of work, where men were not individuals but moved as one, each one a cog, as if even work was not work any more, but had been atomized into a new, painful machine. He thought the world was not whole any more, but sundered into country and court, winners and the lost, Protestants and heretics, royalists and roundheads, the unfairly blessed and the unjustly damned. He felt very far from his own world of small luxuries taken for granted, hot water in a china.